When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, I'm going to whisper some things to you now about Crunch chocolate bars. Because apparently this whispering thing is a thing that makes you feel things. It's saying something crunchy is coming in the candy wrapper language. Imagine your tongue hiking up those crispy, rocky ridges. Now, drum roll please.
Wow, that's good. Crunchy, munchy chocolate doesn't whisper.
Turn up the fun with Crunch.
Everybody, and welcome to another episode of Horror Movie Night. If my voice sounds a little bit deeper and sexier and more rugged than before, I was at San Diego Comic-Con, and...
they're not related.
They're not related to anything, but we are talking about...
Came home a man.
Jaws 2 from 1978.
You know, 78? Really?
I believe so, yeah.
Wow. Oh, yeah, it's 78.
High bar here. This was easily the best Jaws sequel. And here's the reason why I finally decided to pick this one. I realized the other day that what I like about Jaws 2.
What I like about 2.
There are elements of Jaws 2 that I do think are as good as Jaws 1. But Jaws 2 is the Friday the 13th sequel of this franchise.
Correct.
It really is and operates like a slasher film.
Dude, I wrote that as an exact note that I wrote down. It is full-blown slasher, which we might have talked about on here before, but like actually seeing it, this is my first time watch, actually seeing it take place, I was like, oh my god, it really is. It's this unstoppable slasher force attacking these kids that like they literally all do end up in one spot, which is this boat.
That's
like,
the best part
raft.
Of the, well,
right.
It's not the best part of the movie, but it's the most surprisingly...
I think that this third... One of my notes says, real talk, I think this movie has a fantastic third act set piece with the kids all on their boats huddled together trying to survive. Like, it is a very well-paced suspense thriller horror sequel. It's obviously not as good or impressive as the first one, but it does hit a lot of good beats. It could probably stand to be 20 minutes shorter.
Yeah, it's quite a long...
But all in all, it's not a bad time. So I know Kyle said this was his first watch. I'm assuming it was your first watch, Scott, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely my first watch. I mean, it's not that I don't... There's a lot to like here.
Oh, no.
It's just like the pacing's kind of garbage. That's really the problem that I have with it.
It's got a big second act when it doesn't need to.
No. No, it does. It takes a while. There are bits and pieces of it that I really like. I mean, I think obviously like Roy Scheider coming back looking like James Woods is a choice.
He really
fucking looks like James Woods here.
So do you know the story of this one? Of Roy Scheider had no interest in doing this movie.
Sure.
And essentially,
understandably so,
only agreed to do it to get out of his Universal contract. He was like he apparently owed them like two or three movies on his contract, and he was like, look, if I do Jaws 2, will you wipe my slate clean and let me literally go anywhere else to make movies? And they were like, sure.
Oh my god, good for them. Good for everybody involved. Yeah, it feels like this was a win-win.
But you can kind of tell that he's only like 1 foot in.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The schmacting of the shame that he felt shooting this blue fish.
I like that a lot.
Yeah. The of shooting this blue fish. I was like, oh, this, like, he really is. He's almost like, he's not phoning it in. He's overdoing it there. And I'm like, are you, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? But so, I loved it. I actually, like, I loved it. It felt like a more unhinged Brody, right?
Well,
Brody and mayor too. Like that mayor was. Could you imagine being that mayor and being like, "Oh, here it goes."
Well, like, that's the. I mean, that's the great joke that happens every election. Is like reminder, 3 years after the first Jaws movie, he's still mayor, and this is why it's important to vote in your local elections.
Correct. Correct. What a knucklehead.
So there's about 8 minutes of deleted scenes. I sent you guys the only important one. A lot of it is like deleted for good reason. But one thing I did say, I kind of wish they had kept this deleted scene in when I was combing through the Blu-ray, is right before Chief Brody gets fired is a meeting with the mayor and all of the other people on the council. And the mayor is very distraught about the decision, but he doesn't have a say in it. And it's like, I kind of wish that that was still in there, because it was like a tiny, the tiniest bit of redemption for the mayor, in the sense of like, he knows that Brody is almost definitely right.
and
doesn't want this to happen. The movie kicks off with a pretty cool opening scene. You've got these two scuba divers. They're swimming around the orca from the first movie, the sunken ship. And then they get got. Like, just a couple quick shots of some teeth, a little bit of stock footage. And then we cut to this gala where there is a marching band just slaying a cover of Downtown by Petunia Clark.
I that was the first active thought that I had watching this, because I just kind of like let the first whatever 2 minutes just wash over me, pun intended, I suppose. But the first thing I actually thought was, so why is this high school marching band playing a 14-year-old song? And it just kind of feels so uncool.
It feels like
I don't
like the
dislike
whole
song.
Like, no, but the whole idea of doing it feels uncool. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Could you imagine being like, ugh, I'm in marching band, and like I have to go to this stupid event and play this song that
they
Yeah, they wanted. They picked the song. They were like,
yeah, but like
guys,
they're
like
it's the kids
downtown.
Would be like, this song. I was two when this song came out. This song hasn't been out long enough for me to be like cool again.
Right. No, this sucks. And like that the gala looks like it's in the mall, right? Is it
in a mall? I honestly thought that it was a mall that they were opening up,
like,
and I was
mall.
Like, man, this is shades of the last couple.
But you know, when you when you turn Amity Island into Florida, things change. Watercolor, event spaces, everything's different in
and
Amity
also
too.
The I love that the pageant winner, what was her title? Miss something or other?
It was like Miss Amity of 77 or whatever.
Yeah,
like.
And she was like so scared to... I mean, first of all, it's super fucking demeaning to have her be in like a bathing suit to be like the ribbon cutter. And then she goes up and she's like very, very shy about cutting the ribbon, and I think it's the mayor who's like, go ahead, and she like does it, and then all these balloons and all this bullshit like confetti fall out of the ceiling, and she's shocked and amazed by it, and all I can think of is that this is over a pool, and those poor fuckers that have to clean the pool before they actually open up this hotel.
Exactly. Well, and so that leads to a whole bunch of other stuff, because yes, the main premise in this one is that they don't want any bad press for this pool that they've just opened, which leads to a part in the
second.
I thought that it was like a
hotel, like a big.
Or that's what I mean. Sorry, this hotel that they've opened, they don't want any bad press about it, and it leads to this weird scene in the second act that Kyle made a reference to, where Chief Brody's firing a gun into the ocean
at
a bunch of bluefish, and he's trying to convince people to get back into the water when he realizes his mistake. But before that, I'm watching it and I'm like, they're nervous that people won't invest in this resort because they have safety precautions. They're like, what's that man doing up there? Like, get him down.
I think it's just that his wife, who's doing all the schmoozing, is like, oh, God, he's probably going to fucking embarrass me again.
Yeah.
You know, they had a very tumultuous relationship. But, you know, one thing that I did want to mention about the spot when he's shooting into the ocean, which is fucking not going to work. I just, anybody that wants to kill a fish, you're probably not going to do it with cyanide coated bullets shot into the ocean.
Yeah. Into the fucking ocean.
Yeah, like, nah. I don't.
From a pretty far distance,
he really has a lot of people.
Yeah, he's got a lot of faith in his ability to hit that shark from that distance.
Like, with cyanide bullets. Like,
those bluefish aren't even near the people at that point. Those bluefish do not want to go near the people.
No.
So, in theory, if the shark's there, it's not anywhere close. It's just crazy to me.
He did probably take out one or two
bluefish.
Which,
this whole movie, it's all those people's fault. The shark didn't come to the beach. They went out. Like, it's their fault.
Listen, don't get me wrong on this. I am Mr. That is their home, and I respect it and will not invite myself into it.
Right. Fuck that.
No, it's an interesting... So we have this really cool scene. Again, hitting the beats of a slasher movie, right? You get that first kill right out the gate, set the tone, and then there's, like, the 20 minutes of fake out stuff where it's like all the teens, we're introduced to all of the teens act on this dock. And there's like the one kid is, what is it called? Like parasailing or whatever, where he's like, he keeps dropping into the water and then they speed up.
I thought that was hilarious actually.
Yeah. Like, but they're faking you out with it. You're like, ooh, is he going to get it? And like, he's not.
Have his butt cheek chewed off.
Like a ghoulie.
That's how I would react.
Ooh. There's even a little bit of credit that must be given, because it's a 70s movie, for one dude correcting another dude for a sexist comment on the dock.
I did appreciate that.
He goes,
one for the good guys.
Yeah, he goes, do you have to be like that? And I'm like, look at him. Good work right there.
Does he get eaten, though? I can't remember who gets eaten. I know there's the one
dude. I think it's just the one dude, Eddie.
Fucking, right? Yeah, that guy is like just such a horn dog. And so that really does kind of mirror like a slasher, because he's you know, he and his girlfriend probably should have both gotten eaten.
Yeah, him and Tina, man.
In theory, shark tooth through one person and then into Tina.
Oh my god!
Like
it's fin, like it's dorsal fin.
Just Finn. Hell yeah!
Oh, we should not put this out into the world, because that dude that does all the Sharknado movies is gonna be like, why didn't we do that in this movie? Yeah. In any
why
of our
did we stop
yet?
At 10? We got to do one more
And have it literally. Unicorn kill people.
We get this water skier boat driver moment that I think is masterfully done as well. The shark is following the water skier, knocks her out, and then there's silence at the water. The person driving the boat's like, what happened? And then boof, shark just straight into the side of the boat. And as she's stumbling to try to kill this shark, she accidentally blows herself up and terribly burns the shark. But think about
how bombastic that is.
Oh, this is why we had to pick it for this episode. That scene alone is why it becomes horror movie night fodder, where the first film fails.
Well, the thing about that in particular is that those are the kills that I felt bad for those people, you know? Like, they are just, it's like the old woman said. She was like, one minute they were having the time of their lives, the next minute they were gone.
Yep. But man, we get so much out of that moment, right? Like, we get that explosion. We get Chief Brody finding the charred up corpse. Like,
that was an actual jump scare that got me, and I was like, I'll accept that. That was one of the best jump scares of my entire adult life.
Yeah, because I'm not flipping over that piece of wood. Yeah,
yeah. I don't know why I wasn't expecting a corpse, but you know, two.
No, it got Carly and I too.
I literally just thought that it was going to be like the other half of the girl's ski, and then for him to be like, I knew it, because I don't think that they found any. They didn't find anybody.
Yeah.
At the wreckage. And so I thought there was going to be like just a clue, not like
bits and pieces.
A whole body.
Yeah, a whole fucking body. And then later on in the movie, there's the scuba divers. They're going down there to try to find some stuff. They're looking for, I think, both the missing scuba divers and the corpses of the skier. And that's when we finally get the reveal of the now burnt up on the side of the face shark. And I'm like, God damn, did they make that thing look good? Yeah. Like, it looks so gnarly.
Could you imagine? I mean, after you hear all the stories of the first fucking shark being like just a nightmare to work with. And then this one apparently is flawless and looks great. And
it's the
is
only time Jaws looks good.
It's salt water in the wound for these guys. It's got to be really a huge bummer for that Jaws 1 crew.
They're just sailing away.
We reference him already, but my favorite part of the movie, the best kill in the movie as far as I'm concerned, is Eddie the teenage boy trying to get laid on his boat. Shark hits him, hits the boat, he falls off, and as he's swimming, the shark just grabs him and fucking slams him into the side of his boat. Like in full force. It makes no logistical sense.
The shark's anti-capital. The shark's anti-capitalist. Fuck all these rich people.
Yeah. Like, this definitely. Is terrible.
The sailing is rich people shit, and I hate it. I do. Sorry, everybody.
The meme that's like, I should buy a boat. It's not a speedboat. It's not like a fishing boat. It's literally like, unless you're a multimillionaire, probably you don't have like a mini yacht or anything like that.
No.
But you have a sailing boat if you are a very well-to-do white dude with who's probably a lawyer, you know, and so
sure.
Sailing
real estate, so, you know, you did pretty
good
probably
on the real estate now.
I
did go sailing one time as a child, and I got to like do a significant amount of like the work, but it was just on like Lake Erie. It wasn't like
in
the
open
sea,
ocean,
you know? Yeah,
bummer.
It was only for like an hour. and I hated it.
Yeah,
I really hate sailing.
I don't. Here's the thing. I don't like anything tied to the ocean. I don't like sailing. I don't like going to the beach and walking in the sand and getting fucking sand all over the place. Like, there's no appeal.
Calm down, Anakin.
Like, I don't like any of it. Like, it's always like, ooh, would you rather have a beach house or a mountain house? I'm like, fucking mountain house. That's not even up for debate.
Well, yeah, a mountain house also is never going to, you know, have a hurricane. But I like. Like inlet beaches, you know, where it's very calm. And I mean, I don't mind a smaller lake, like a, you know, like the Finger Lakes in New York State.
Yeah.
Those are fantastic. And some of those are incredibly, like, creepily deep because they're glacial cut from the earth. And so the one that Megan and I went on last summer was, it, you know, they have like a depth monitor.
Yeah.
On the when you rent a boat, and we rented a pontoon this year, or last year rather, the time before when we went, we rented a speedboat. Meg was like, "Faster, faster!" Yeah, I'm like, "Oh my god, I'm gonna shit my pants!" Because I, you know, 50 miles an hour on the water
on
is
the water
insane.
Is horrifying.
Yeah. And
you feel every mile per hour in your face, and it's very scary.
Yes. So anyway, we got a pontoon on purpose last year for the second time around, and we're on this different lake, and it goes. Like the depth counter goes from, you know, 15 feet to 38 feet to 120 feet to like 2,000 feet. And I'm like, what just happened?
What happened?
It's because like it's almost a completely vertical drop in the middle of that lake.
And what fucking lives in there, man?
Exactly,
something lives in
there.
Well, that's next year's pick, the Crater Lake Monster.
But anyway, Megan loves to swim. She loves to get into any body of water. I jumped in and immediately jumped out of that lake last summer because I have never given myself like a complex about getting my feet nibbled on by
that's my thing.
Lovecraftian monster.
I can go into a pool and maybe if I was in like say the Bahamas where it's like crystal clear water that you can see the bottom of, I'd be like, all right, sure, but
you
the
can
second
go to Jaws,
like
go to
jellyfish,
Jaws too.
Right?
Yeah, the second I can't see what's below the water, I'm just like can't do it.
I was going to say
I'm sorry. I just remembered. I have Lake Erie Monster IPA from Great Lakes as my beer.
That's That's amazing.
I didn't even mean to bring that around into the conversation.
Incredible. I'm waiting for the day that you both have the same drink, though. But Kyle, what drink do you have?
I would love for that to happen one day. It might happen next. Actually, it's not going to happen next week.
It's not gonna happen going next to happen next week because I've actually tried actively to not. Maybe, though, we can do the mind meld thing and make something happen this
just
fall.
Stare at each other for 30 minutes on StreamYard and see if we can make it happen. I got Montauk Watermelon Session Ale. So that's I got it confused with Narragansett. I was going to be like any New Englander, and then I realized I got it confused with Narragansett, and Montauk is Long Island. But it all plays
is Narragansett?
Narragansett is – or I'm sorry, Nantucket. Nantucket was, yeah. Narragansett's Rhode Island. Nantucket is Massachusetts area, I think. I might be lying directly
where was,
to people's faces.
Where was – Matt will know this. Where was the first Jaws filmed?
So if I hear the name, I'll distinctly remember it. It's
they shot in Martha's Vineyard.
Martha's Vineyard.
Oh, okay. That
that's
makes
what it
sense.
Was.
And then what was this one?
That's where they do the special screening. They did the 40-year anniversary screening where you could watch it in the lake where they shot the movie in an inner tube. And I was
Megan does not love horror movies, but she would have loved to do that.
I was going to say, if you like calm beaches, you have to come visit up here because we are our coastline is separated by Long Island, so it actually breaks up. Like, I mean, here's the thing. The only problem with that is that it does get, like, seaweed-y, right?
Oh,
and,
yeah.
Like, the beaches are a little bit rocky. But all in all, like, the sound breaks up the waves, so it's just, like, very chill, very just, like, sit here.
I mean,
look
you
at
live
the
on the water, and I didn't hear it for one second.
No, you can't,
calm.
Okay,
it's
Matt,
crazy.
Next summer we're going to do what
we'll
something
do some
special.
Convention
and we're
up there.
We're just going to go to his house.
Just come hang.
For free.
Yeah,
you
can
come
do the live stream up here.
Let's do the live stream at Kyle's. The reason I asked about where Jaws 1 was filmed is because I wanted to know where Jaws 2 was filmed.
Florida.
That was in Florida? Okay.
It was in Florida. It was, I forget where in Florida, but it was in Florida because I looked it up because there's this, like, there's a few wide shots where the water is so blue.
Yeah.
I was like, there's no way. There's
but
no
some of
way.
The beaches look very, like,
the beaches,
Cape
the
Hatteras,
beaches,
you know?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And like, they've did a lot to make it work, but there is just a lot of, I mean, there's just a lot
I didn't see
blue.
A single palm
Fort,
tree. So.
Fort Walton Beach in Florida.
Yeah.
Here's something that's interesting.
I don't know where technically in Florida that is, but it doesn't. I don't know if it's Gulf
we
or
can
if
ask
it's Atlantic.
Brian. He'll probably
Brian.
So part of the thing that's kind of random about this is like 78. I don't want to say that's early for them
it
doing
is.
Sequels like this, but it's they're not it used is. To it because apparently the original pitch for a Jaws sequel was that it was going to be a prequel based around Quint's USS Annapolis story that he tells on the boat. And they're like, well, what if we just make a movie about that and call it Jaws 2?
Call Baby Jaws. Doo, doo, doo.
Okay, stop. Nope, you're done. You're tapped out. That's the parent on the show.
Nah, that is good.
Can we talk about my favorite character in the movie, this fucking theater nerd who damages his own boat by being too busy doing some pirate monologue?
The dude from Christine.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Amazing.
I was
so
like,
good.
I know he's from another HMN movie that we watched recently, but I just didn't go and look at the IMDb at all, which was so strange because I typically like
you're
live
like, fuck
on
him.
It.
He's dead. Oh, well, he's in these. I love that they credited all these kids as featured players. Like, I was like, what is this?
It's very
Shakespearean. So, I really can't believe that it's 78. It does read. It does have so many slasher tropes.
Yeah.
That I am so surprised that it's that early. Like, I thought it was 82, you know? Like
it looks like 1980 to me, and that would make sense because that would have been, they would have had a fast turnaround from the screenplay to the filming to blah, blah, blah. But it being 78 really does kind of throw a wrench in the gears because you think about it, Halloween didn't come out until 78.
No, it just was something in the air. It just,
no,
like, I
well,
don't
so
think
this is what I think is that 74 was Black Christmas, and then we start to get that, like, you know, stalking women kind of thing, and that's what the nucleus of this is. And I really think that 78 kind of was like the when we got that fission, you know, like that.
Almost
first,
like common language, like common language, almost like developed in '78 to then build upon.
I want to bring really things real quick back to our dude from Christine, because interesting thing that I just realized, I was like, I need to know the dude's name. It's Keith Gordon. Keith Gordon, the next year after this movie, played young Roy Schneider in All That Jazz.
Wow.
That's
very
crazy.
Cool.
Yeah,
that's really cool.
And it's like, I guess I can kind of see how he has that slender face where it'd be like, yeah, we can make this guy look like the teenage version of Roy Schneider. Kyle, I have a question specifically for you. Although Scott may have seen this in his lifetime, but you and I have talked at length about how often we watched the American Pie 2 DVD.
Yeah.
Which, at that point in time, we'll say it was 2001, for about 2 years, anytime you bought a Universal DVD, it started with a montage advertisement of Universal titles that you could not skip that 1,000% contained this burn-up shark face jumping at the camera.
Yes, it did. Yep, it did. It was the most action-y. They're like, yes, we have Jaws, but Jaws 1 isn't really that exciting. They didn't say that.
No,
but a burned-up Jaws is much more exciting.
Jumping right at the camera with the mouth open. Yeah.
They paired it with another explosion, with another, it just worked so well.
It's burned into my brain that it shows up.
It's burned into the Jaws brain, too.
It's burned into the shark, too, yeah.
So the thing is that for the listeners that don't know this, once we build our schedule for, 3-5 months, however long it is, that we, have at least a bunch of stuff planned out, I will go out and I'll get images for our social media spots. So I'll always get a poster and at least two pictures, screenshots from the movie. And it becomes more difficult when you haven't seen the movie. Now, this is the perfect example of me not realizing what I was getting into, because I Googled Jaws 2 photos, and there are these photos of a shark blowing up, and I'm like, that can't be from Jaws 2. Yeah. It's from Jaws 2. I just, it seemed so over the top. I had the hardest time going back. Like, in retrospect, I probably should have, known that it was going to be so over the top because you picked it. But damn, I went with really tame pictures this time because I was like, these can't be from this movie.
Yeah.
They have to be from, Cruel Jaws or something.
The shark kill in this movie is, out of the four Jaws movies, in my opinion, the best way that they've taken out this shark, because it is insane.
He's insane.
Just fully on fire.
And you see fire coming out of one eye socket at a point, which is just...
It's so
such
good.
A slasher kill, too. Like, that's how you kill the bad guy. You burn
exactly.
through a crisp. It's a fucking amazing ending.
I mean, right. I'm not sure if either one of you were able to ride the Jaws ride in Universal, but that's how they chose to kill the shark at the end of the Universal ride as well, is that you set it on fire with an electrical cord that the skipper that's piloting your boat pulls out of the water, and then you get the burnt up Jaws face coming at, like, they really tied Jaws 1 and 2 into that single ride because they were both of equal importance. Like, Jaws is a very important movie for a ton of reasons. Jaws 2, though, credit must be given to arguably one of the most iconic taglines in film history, just when you thought it was safe to go back in the water.
It's true.
Like, the amount of times
Holy shit, I thought that was from Jaws.
No, that's
Jaws 2.
I did
not realize it was a sequel tagline.
Yeah.
listeners, I'm not an absolute horror idiot. I've been doing the show for a very long time.
You knew it was Jaws something. Yeah.
Yeah, but the reason why I have such a blind spot when we do these movies is because I mean, of all the giant monster movies, I think I had seen three in my entire life before Matt and I started doing horror movie nights. So,
I got some great news for you. Shudder emailed me the other day to see if I wanted to have a screener of the Sharksploitation documentary.
Steven Scarlatta!
Yeah, yes.
And I almost watched it.
I wanted to watch it before this, and I'm so mad that I didn't. So I'm interested to hear if anybody did.
It probably was going to be like 3 or 4 hours, though, right?
I think concise on
is
that
it a
one,
normal
right?
amount
no this is a normal one this is from the producer of Jodorowsky's Dune.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
he went on to direct this and he's a good sport who would not do a four-hour documentary, though he could talk at length. He could talk at length about shark movies. He's a fucking brilliant dude, but the documentary is
well,
the proper
Spielberg length. Bless him for being not so full of himself as to do a four-hour documentary.
And the only other thing that we need to talk about to wrap up Jaws 2 is probably one of the more iconic moments in the movie. So iconic that it's attacking Kyle as we speak. The shark taking down the helicopter. And what I love about this scene is that it's a great script writing trick of like, we've got these kids huddled around on these ships. Here's their fake salvation, right? Mm-hmm. Here's the helicopter that's coming to save them. And I love that not only is it a false salvation for them, it actually fucks them up even more because as the helicopter gets pulled underwater, the blades break off as they hit the water and destroy all of their sails. So now they can't even hope for a gust of wind to maybe get them to land. They are fully trapped in the spot where they are.
How would it have been if they would have like leaned into that with the, I mean, because I know that you sent us the extended version of that they had to cut so that it could be PG, but if they went for the hard R rating on this, we got that, and then we could have the kids get like partially mangled by pieces of helicopter.
That would have been the 80s version of this movie.
Dude, that's what I was waiting for.
Like the mutilator. It's like
No.
Jaws the mutilator.
You have to remember, because I sent it to you and I was like, I hope they understand, like, the 70s specifically, like, the MPAA ratings were like, will this absolutely traumatize a child? If so, it probably needs to be an R rating. So I can understand why a man trapped in an upside down helicopter screaming for his dear life as a shark smashes against it.
I'm 41-ish, and that is an incredibly, it's one of those scenes where you just hold your breath. And not, I have a thing, like when there are underwater scenes in a movie, my entire life, I cannot help it but hold my breath because my little lizard brain is like, don't drown.
Well, no, so I do something similar. My lizard brain is anytime that people are driving in a scene, I am bracing myself for a car crash, no matter what.
Especially when they like stare too long.
When they do that profile, look, they're like, and you're like, oh, you're going to hit a cross street at any moment.
And sometimes I'm right and sometimes I'm wrong, but my body still tenses up every single time.
I wonder what the first, obviously I'm not sure if we could actually pinpoint it, but I wonder what the first one that we have seen in our lives was.
Oh, man.
I actually think that the movie Crash, not Cronenberg's, the other one, was probably the first one that did it to me. I think they did it like really, really effectively. And it's
the one that truly caught me off guard and fucked me up was Adaptation. Because it's literally like them just telling you a story and someone's backing out of their driveway and just gets fucking smashed by a speeding pickup truck instantaneously, and it's so unexpected.
Whether you're working out or working on your high score, you never settle for less. So why should it be any different when you choose your protein drink? Rockin' Protein comes in three delicious flavors, has 30 grams of protein, and is always made with fresh milk, so you're never left with that chalky taste. Rockin' Protein. Never settle for less than a great-tasting, high-quality protein drink. Visit rockinprotein.com to find Rockin' Protein wherever you are. Rockin' Protein and Shamrock Farms are registered trademarks of Shamrock Foods Company.
At Sephora, we know how you love to use makeup, skincare, hair care, and fragrances that work for you, but also how important it is to be in the know about the ingredients that are in them, which is why we created Clean at Sephora. Curated products from brands like Merit, Amika, Summer Fridays, and Fleur that have everything you want, minus certain ingredients you might not. Clean at Sephora is only at Sephora. Shop now at Sephora.com.
It is mind-blowing.
And heartbreaking.
How many original scripts are written every year but are never made?
So we seek out these scripts and bring them to life with full audio production and professional actors.
Check us out at Undiscover Scripts.
Movies made of paper.
Wherever you get your podcasts.
Free!
All right, well, I think that's Jaws 2, so, I mean, we can just wrap up the episode.
Nope, we can't. We got another thing to go over. We need to go over double features, Lord. Matt. I know you're so forgetful. It's okay. Why don't you tell us your double feature?
It's kind of an obvious one, but Last Shark. I mean, the helicopter scene in Last Shark is definitely better than the helicopter scene in this one. But yeah. Last Shark is so good. It's good.
Yeah, so here's my question for you, as someone who probably saw Jaws 2 before Last Shark, right?
Yes.
So, I saw Last Shark before Jaws 2, as everyone knows. And I love Last Shark. It's my favorite giant animal movie, probably. And I love that scene. Now, do you think that that scene is more over the top or less over the top for someone who has not seen the Jaws 2 helicopter scene?
I think it's probably more over the top. Like, we have to also focus on the fact that the shark physically pulling a helicopter underwater is probably the most unrealistic thing that this movie tries to sell us on. Like, no, that helicopter would just keep going, and eventually the teeth would like tear on the cushion.
It's biting into a cushion.
It's a float.
Also,
it's
don't sharks' teeth just like pop out easily?
Pop out all the time.
Oh my god!
That's why they have all those necklaces on the beaches. That's why they have those. Yeah, they're really easy to come by. Carly looks over to me when the helicopter thing was going, and she goes, "As a shark, that's agitating to me." helicopter's really close.
I actually think that Jaws 2 is more absurd in what it's trying to sell us, because The Last Shark leans so hard into it that it's like cartoonishly absurd, but Jaws 2 wants us to buy it. But Last Shark is definitely way more over the top and weird. How about you guys? What would you double feature this?
Kyle, why don't
with?
You go ahead?
I this is such a cop out, but I was actually just going to say the Sharksploitation documentary, even though I haven't seen it. I just as this movie being the sort of like this, what feels like the true crossover of like the horror genre and like Jaws.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, it's like not only did Jaws set in motion these exploitation movies, but Jaws 2 really must have. Yeah. So it's a little bit of promo for Steven, but it's also I think it's going to be a really cool doc. And it makes me like shark movies. Between this and like Cruel Jaws and Last Shark and even some of the later ones that, I mean, Carly and I watched Ouija Shark the other day. And just,
oh my
like,
God.
You know, like there's just shit that, I don't know. Sharks are weird. I don't care for them really all that much. Yeah. I don't love shark movies, but I just can't believe that there is like a true subgenre that is like shark movies.
Yeah, and when you think of like giant animal movies, you think sharks.
Or alligators, rather.
I mean, reptiles.
So something, mm-hmm. I think you're right, Kyle, that this is really what set off Sharksploitation. It was a massive success. Right, made on a $20 million budget and brought in $208 million.
Wow.
But,
Holy shit.
It was actually the following year, Rocky II beat this, but it was the highest grossing sequel in history at the time of its release. Then the next year, Rocky II came out. But
yeah, sure.
Like,
but I mean, think about it. I mean, those are real heavy hitters.
Yeah.
Oh, look at that.
He's got jokes.
Scott, what
He's
do you got?
He's got jokes. Yeah, what would your double feature be?
Just gonna go with Creepshow 2, specifically The Raft.
Oh, nice.
It's also
nice.
It evens out the runtime of the two of them, because one is 30 minutes long and one is 2 hours.
It's like you watched a it's already like you watched a double feature.
Yeah.
Your perfect double feature.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's great.
All right. So then we're definitely done, right? There's nothing else?
You know, this bit is ridiculous. We know that Kyle and I need to get you to the next spot, so just let it
happen. I never pull my weight in this moment.
So Matt, what do you want to promote this week?
I'm pretty sure I already talked about the Traitors last week's episode, the reality show that I watched on I want to say it was Peacock. That is literally just the game of Mafia.
Yes.
Played with reality show stars. Okay, cool. Well, then in that case, I'm going to talk about one of the four books that I read during my California trip this week. The book that I read throughout my entire flight to California, Lose You to Find Me by Eric J. Brown, former guest of the podcast. It's hard for me to explain this book unbiasedly because Eric is writing about our high school job, and I recognize every character. Like, every single character, I'm like, I remember that boss. I remember that coworker. Like, he's very much pulling from, like, our own experiences. So there is probably a thicker level of rose-tinted nostalgia for me than most other readers. But where I think that All That's Left in the World is such a good book, I legitimately think that this is a masterpiece. It's so well-crafted. Like, he described it as Empire Records in a retirement home, and that's exactly what it is. Like, you're just hanging out with these fun teenagers, and every chapter is just like a little snapshot vignette of like a day in the retirement home with like one romantic subplot tying it all together. But by the time you get to what is essentially the third act of the book, all of those vignettes suddenly matter, and they do come back to the bigger picture. It's so masterfully written and put together in that way. And it's a story about a kid who, when he was very young, made a friend at summer camp, and that was how he realized that he was gay, was the friend that he made in summer camp. And then the kid from summer camp went home one week and then just never came back, and he's never heard of him or thought of him since. And now it's his senior year of high school. He's getting ready for college, and he's asked to train a new kid at work, and it's the kid from summer camp, and the kid from summer camp doesn't remember him. And it's him grappling with that. Like, how could this person who is so important in my life story not even remember who I am? And it really starts to fuck with his plan for the future. And that's kind of the theme of the whole show is like, or the whole book is like, characters in high school planning out their future and then realizing that like 18 is way too damn young to try to figure out what your future actually is. So it's just so well done. I read two different YA novels during this trip, both of them great. And I was trying to explain it to somebody and I was like, dude, YA romance novels fall into the same bucket for me as like a 90s teen flick, a Hallmark Christmas movie, or a slasher film. Like, they have a formula. In like 10 minutes, you know exactly how it's going to end, and then you're just enjoying the ride to get to that foregone conclusion with like no pressure, no stress. You're just like, this, it's going to hit these beats. These friends are going to stop being friends for like 20 pages, and then they're going to become friends again, and like, the person who you thought they were going to end up with, they're not going to end up with. But like the other person who was kind of there is who they like. You just always it fits a very specific formula. The formula works, and I will happily read like 50 books that have that same formula. They are perfect for flights or like train. Like, if you're like just going to have to kill 5 hours, I cannot recommend a YA novel enough. And Lose You to Find Me is the perfect one.
I love it. Kyle, hit us up.
Well, so to build upon that, I watched the first season of The Summer I Turned Pretty.
Oh, yeah. Megan's been watching that.
Yeah. And so we all know, let's listen to the crowd say it, he's bad at TV. So I don't know how far I'll get in this, but man, like, so while there is a formula for YA, and I wouldn't necessarily call The Summer I Turned Pretty young adult, though, like, I really do think it bridges the gap because there's this whole storyline about the mothers of the children that are going, like, that are there too. So it's very like, it's very emotion porn-y. Like, it's not as like heavy, it's not as hardcore as Parenthood, but it's also like, it has a whole span of emotions just revolving around these kids. And I love stuff like that too, because it does take a common narrative or a pattern or something that you can see in the young adult stuff and then build upon it into a world so that you can actually have one foot in and one foot out, you know, like you can actually be like, really a lot more almost reality based. Like, it's not just the pattern, but you can find comfort in being able to fall back upon characters that you know or setups that you can like in like find yourself in. And I was just like really enjoying it. It was what I was watching between these two short film productions, and we had some friends from Texas visiting, and it was just like, and they also have a young kid, 18 months, so like once the kids were in bed, we would just sit down and watch a couple episodes. It was really nice to just sort of like watch that. Jenny Han's got something going on, dude. Jenny Han's got it going on, which has probably been said in many an article, but I like it.
All right. Scott, how about you? Take us home.
All right. So I decided that since this is pretty late in the summer when this is coming out, I want to give a quick recap on a couple great summer records that I came across this summer. I have just two, well, three. One is an honorable mention. I guess I'll start with that. There is a band from Pittsburgh that originally started out in Philly called Danvers, like Carol Danvers, and they came out with an album called Like We Knew What It Meant, and they are very they're very late 90s aggressive emo, but it's not like screamo, and it's not fast enough to really be Old Saves the Day, but it kind of scratches the itch of Old Saves the Day. So it's really, really great, great material. And the reason I know about that band is because the lead singer slash main songwriter slash guitar player, whatever, years and years ago, probably like a decade ago, put out a post on like the Cleveland Craigslist musicians section saying like looking for a second guitar player. And I was like, I mean, maybe I could do that. Go out to Pittsburgh every 6 weeks and prep up, just do a little bit of fun pop punk. Like not really pop punk, but it kind of also fits into that. Never really even went out for an audition, but have followed them ever since. And they've put out some great records, but this one is very, very good. And it sounds like it's from the late 90s. It's really quite nice. Quite interesting how they do that. Yeah, please do. And then the next one is slightly more punk rock, but also still has a lot of polish. It's called the band is called Doghouse Rose, and the album is called Unlearn. And female fronted, and she kind of has a bit of a Bomb Pops type approach. But the reason why this record is one of my favorites, it'll be on my list at the end of the year, but definitely the record that I've listened to the most this summer, is because they have this song called Jacob's Sweater. Now, the first song on the record is great. It's called Don't Be an Asshole. And it's like, you can be an asshole if you want to, but why would you? And it's like very upbeat. It's super fun. But the song Jacob's Sweater it's kind of like this minor key driving kind of skate punk song, but it's about this guy that she sees at a show, her friend Jacob, who had gone thrifting that day and gets a new sweater, and she loves the sweater and she wants to steal it from him, but then he gets fucking mustard on it. And the end of it is they do this riff on Master of Puppets, but they say mustard, and it is incredible. So those two are just real great. And then my guilty pleasure is this kind of power pop duo called Honey Revenge. And my God, when you listen to the song Airhead, it is the first song on the album. It will get stuck in your head for days. It is such a well-produced album, but it's pop music. So like, you know, I'm not saying that if you like punk rock that you will like it, but it definitely owes a lot to Paramore, I suppose, but it's just kind of a different angle. It's real fun though, and very, very, very polished. So I highly recommend everybody check out those three bands if you are into any of those subgenres of punk rock, pop punk, whatever you want to call it.
Nice. And
I just added them all to my to listen playlist. Thank you, Scott.
Mm-hmm. There we go. And next week, stay tuned for my what did I watch, what did I read, whatever this week, because it might tie back to Scott's.
Unintentionally.
But you're gonna have to wait next week for that. So stay tuned for more Horror Movie Night.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.